Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm Sarah McDilling and I'm very lucky to be here today with the amazing Ellie Larkin.
Thank you for having me here at Booktopia. It's very exciting.
Well, thank you so much for coming. Now, you have a new book out. It's the first in a series. It's called Devour. Could you tell us a little bit about your new book?
Yes, certainly. Devour is about a group of scientists in Antarctica who are in a very remote part on an ice sheet, and they are drilling down through 3 kilometres of ice to reach a subterranean lake. Now, this lake has been buried beneath the ice for centuries, and they're doing this because they believe that in this lake there is life. So they actually believe there is something down there that is living, it's ancient, it's never before had contact with mankind, and that is their mission to do so. And the story is about Olivia Wolfe, who is an investigative journalist, who is sent somewhat reluctantly to Antarctica because her focus is political conspiracies, exposing corruption, exposing criminal cartels. And she's sent off to Antarctica on this job where there's potential sabotage and potential murder. But nothing is really clear initially. And all I will say then is that once she arrives in Antarctica, well, she probably had no idea of the horrors that are going to be unleashed later on in the book. But I don't want to say too much because
we have to try and avoid spoilers.
Yeah. I don't. But it leads to a point where, you know, she will be hunted by assassins and placed in terrible danger as she begins to understand more and more about what they have actually brought to the surface.
Now, Olivia Wolfe is an amazing character.
Oh, thank you.
I really enjoyed this first adventure. I love to, when you feel like you're at the beginning of what's going to be a long and amazing series, it's like really exciting to read the first book and not read it when the series is already established. So I feel like, you know, I'm at the beginning of the Jack Reacher series or something like that and see it reading the first one for the first time. I would love if you could just give people out there a sort of understanding of Olivia's character, because she's a very interesting person.
So, talking about the series, other thrillers that I've written where the character has been selected and created specifically to tell that story. Mm-hmm. So they're one-offs, and in many ways, I mean, that's a lot of work, but it's easier. But then when you're creating a series, the thing that I have to do then is I have to plan for her to grow and develop as a character. Well, I believe that's important, that people who will want to follow her onto her next adventure, uncovering her next conspiracy, they will want to see her moving, developing, learning more about herself as she goes through all these adventures. So I have to hold some stuff back. And in some early drafts of Devour, an editor came back to me and said, you know, I think you should keep this. Don't tell the reader this yet. Keep that for book 2 or book 3. And so it was a bit of a learning process for me to learn that, yes, actually, I do need to hold quite a lot back. But Olivia Wolfe is an investigative journalist for a newspaper called The Post in London. And she's very intrepid, she's courageous, she's resilient, she's resourceful. And she's learned to be because she has been reporting previously from war zones, in combat zones. So not just reporting from the safety of, say, some army camp somewhere where she's just fed information. So she's really out there reporting. So she's very adventurous. She believes her job is to expose the truth, you know, and she will go to any lengths to uncover the truth of what is actually happening and to protect the innocent. So she will go off on a number of journeys in future books, a number of adventures. So for instance, the next one after Devour, so Devour is set in Antarctica. The next one after that is Prey, and that's set in South Africa. So she's a great character because her job will necessitate her to go off all over the world. And it means that I can then write stories from the most amazing locations like Antarctica.
Well, it's a cracking beginning to what I think is going to be an amazing series. There's pretty much everything in here. You travel all over, starting off in Afghanistan and then Antarctica and then Nevada.
Yes.
I know that you've been to Antarctica. Have you been to all of these places?
No, the only place I can honestly say I haven't been to is Afghanistan. In fact, my husband said, you're not going to Afghanistan. It's really not a good idea. Because I actually did, a friend of mine said, I'll go with you. Because she's very adventurous. She said, oh, I said, okay. My husband went, I think seriously about that because, you know, you really want to live long enough so you actually do write your next book.
Yeah.
And I was like, So I actually, what I did for the scenes in Afghanistan was to read a lot of journalist blogs. And use a lot of photography, particularly from Kabul, because Kabul is where you first meet Olivia Wolfe, and learning about the poppy palaces of Afghanistan, and the people who make a lot of money out of selling opium and drugs and so on. So I had to do that through research, but not going Afghanistan. Yes, Antarctica. Yes, I've been very lucky to spend time in Antarctica. I have been to Nevada, and not surprisingly, the parts that are in the UK, yes, I've been to the UK as well. So, the others are pretty well covered off, but they do involve a lot of research. So Porton Down in the UK is one of the locations mentioned, and Porton Down is a real military protected site in the UK, where warfare and germ warfare is experimented on. Mm. It's infamous in the UK. And there are all these stories about what actually goes on behind there and what terrible things are held there. So, it's a combination of going to some places but also reading a lot of reports about them.
And can you tell us a bit about your time in Antarctica? Because not many people have ever been there, and I imagine it's an amazing place to visit.
Yeah, I feel very privileged to have gone to Antarctica. Antarctica is completely alien from any other place that I've ever been to, and I've done a fair bit of travel. It is beautiful, savage, innocent. There's a real, it's almost like, it is the last great untouched wilderness, and it's a whole continent, protected in many ways by the fact it is so incredibly cold. So Antarctica is the coldest, the windiest place, and actually, strangely enough, the driest place on Earth. And you wouldn't think it is, but it's actually drier than the Sahara Desert. You get dehydrated very easily there. Apart from all the other things that can kill you, like blizzards and whiteouts and so on. I remember going there, one of the first things I kind of found so strange was that there's no green. Now, I suppose that's pretty obvious, really, but there are no trees, no plants, no, grass. Everything is blue and white. Mm. It's like you think, wow. And the noises you hear are very different from anything you're used to, like the bark of a fur seal or the creaking and popping and growling of the ice. And the ice does really do that, or the carving of the front of the icebergs and the splash into the ocean. But then if you're somewhere far away from people, and there are very few people there, if you like silence, and I love silence, it's one of the few places in the world where I think you can really, really find true quiet. Mm-hmm. So it's a dangerous place, but I'm a huge fan of it, and I'm a huge fan of it being continued to be protected as this pristine wilderness that it is.
The section in Antarctica, I'm going to struggle to put this into words because it's the kind of thing that I will struggle to put into words, but one thing that really struck me about Devour and that I really liked is that, you pick up a book like this and you expect an action thriller, but there's this whole section in Antarctica which is really verging more on psychological thriller, where everything is, all the action has stopped, you're in a contained space with a limited cast of characters, and you've got a dangerous substance that's been brought up, ancient, unknowable, don't know what it will do. There's things being sabotaged, there's people dying, and it's a really intense, and like you just mentioned, the area is so quiet. That part of the book is like a little eye of the storm, and I found it really, really intense to read. And then, as you come out of it, you're thrown straight into like more the action, action
thrillers, very quickly. Like, yeah,
high octane stuff. But I just can't remember really having read one that does that. You've got action, 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 quiet, tense, scary part, and then. And then more action. Was that? Do you think that was a purposeful thing, or is it maybe influenced by the area?
Well, I do think that. I mean, I like to write very fast-paced thrillers, and I think probably most people would say that I really do that because I like a book to move. I like a lot of plot twists. I like a lot of mysteries. I like a lot of menace, danger, but I also think that you need moments of respite. Otherwise, you'll exhaust the reader. I've had emails from people going, I'm exhausted.
I am exhausted.
I feel like I've been chased like Olivia. You know, I feel like I had some guy who emailed to me. He said, I've broken out in a sweat. I'm sort of feeling like I've gone through hell and back. It's brilliant. He was happy about that.
Yeah.
But I do think there are important for the character and for the reader, there are moments of relative quiet, because quiet can actually be very sinister too. It can be very sinister because it's these things start going horribly wrong, and also things start going horribly wrong to Olivia. Like Olivia, I don't want to spoil too much, but you know, she is in increasing danger because the more she watches and learns of what is going on, and particularly when these very suspicious group of Russians turn up, who are most definitely not what they seem, her life is in danger. And if you know too much, I think Vitaly Yushkov, who is a very important supporting character, I think in the book he says something like, Olivia, if you spy on them, they will come after you. You know, and you know, what she is doing is potentially very dangerous, but you know, someone has died, there is something very wrong about the whole setup that's going on in Antarctica and with these group of Russians turning up. And it's all about what has been brought to the surface. And it's far more than she realizes.
It is very menacing, that whole
good
section.
Good, please, thank you.
I really like the shift between explosions and running and physical action thriller to psychological thriller and then back to act. Like, I thought it was really effective, and it really did. It was stressful because you go from one kind of like intense, oh my god, what's going to happen, to another kind of how they're going to get out of this, how they're going to move on to the next part of the story.
Yeah.
It's a, you know, it's the kind of book that you almost have to just read in one go because there's no real point where you can set it down easily.
Well, then I feel I've done my job. Because I can tell you, one of the best emails I ever received from a reader was, it started off with, it's all your fault, I miss my train, stop. And it's, oh dear. And she said, it's because I just wasn't paying attention and I didn't get off the train because I was reading your book and I just couldn't stop. And if I, as a you know, because these are action and conspiracy thrillers, so if I can do that and I've captured your imagination and you're off in that imaginary world, then I feel very, very honoured that I've done a good job.
That is definitely the case. I'm glad I didn't read this on a train because that most likely would have happened to me. We were talking a bit before the podcast about there are some real people who inspired characters in Devour.
Yes.
Could you tell us about that?
Okay. So the investigative journalist Olivia Wolfe, who is the central character, I'll talk a little bit about her because it is unusual in this style of thriller to have a female lead character. Often the female characters are very strong, intelligent, supporting characters, but they're not the main one.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're the victims. But I wanted to create a character who realistically could weather the horrors that I'm going to throw at this character, and also the dangerous atmosphere and environment that she's going to progressively get involved in. And one of the inspirations for her kind of courage is a real journalist, or was a real journalist, called Marie Colvin. And I used to read her articles. She used to be an investigative reporter for the Sunday Times in London. And she reported from war zones all over the world, and like literally right in the middle of bombardments and grenades going off. She was a champion of the belief that investigative journalists are there to keep those in power honest. Mm. She wanted people to know what was really happening in war zones. And so she really immersed herself in it and was badly hurt on a number of occasions. And very, very sadly, she died in 2012 in the siege of Homs in Syria. And she displayed the kind of amazing dedication, bravery that I hope that I've captured a little bit of in the character of Olivia Wolf. Now, everything else about Olivia Wolf is, it's got nothing to do with this real journalist. But, you know, her personality, how she looks, everything is different. But I felt that if somebody in real life could do the amazing things that Marie Colvin could do, then I hopefully could create a female central character that could do the amazing things that she has to do in Devour and on. So,
wow.
And look, and just the other, I know you asked me earlier about Vitaly Yushkov,
yes,
who is the supporting mysterious Russian. And he's a man of a lot of dark secrets, and you will gradually learn a little drip feeds about him gradually as you, I hope, read the book. He is somebody where I hope the reader will, as Olivia does, as you're reading it, will be going, should she trust him?
Mm.
Is he working with her, or is he actually working against her? Is he safe to be with, or isn't he? And I mean, one of the big questions is he actually an SVR agent? Which the SVR is the new KGB. So they are the spies and the assassins. And so that's a question that goes on through quite a lot of the book. And of course, I won't tell you how it's all concluded. But the actual Russian character came to mind because I thought, well, wouldn't it be great to actually have a Russian who wasn't necessarily the bad guy? So I'm not going to go into too much detail, because Russians are always the bad guy. You know, James Bond, oh, shove a Russian in there. It's got to be the bad guy, you know. But the idea came to me was when I was on an ex-scientific research ship with a Russian crew. So it was basically a Russian ship. And these fascinating characters on board, the Russian captain, but there was a Russian ship's engineer who seriously didn't seem to be impacted by the cold climate at all. Everyone else was, you know, gloves, hat, and he was no hat, no gloves, you know, didn't seem to be affected by anything, tumultuous waves, not even bothered by it. And I just thought, wow, that's, you know, what an amazing man. And he was talking a bit about his military service. And, you know, just through that kind of interaction, I thought, well, there will be times when it will be really interesting to have the dynamic of Olivia and Vitaly isolated and fighting for their lives together, because they complement each other with their skills.
Yeah.
And I thought they would actually make a really interesting team, but always with that question of, is he who he says he is? And that, yes, adds an interesting dynamic.
Well, there's a lot of, no, yeah, watching those two circle each other, and because it works both ways, and he's not sure. Olivia looks guilty a lot of the time,
yes,
of things, which there's so much in this book. Honestly, I keep getting sidetracked. But one thing I thought was amazing about it is that you've got different story threads going on. There's the main,
yes,
action,
yes,
which is a big story with, mm-hmm, lots of intrigue and drama going on, but you've also got Olivia's past, so,
yes,
which is elements of her past sort of that you have to piece together, woven throughout the story. And there's also someone stalking Olivia at the same time whose identity is unclear. How difficult was it for you to balance those three threads going through, because it's done so well?
There were times when I seriously was thinking, why am I doing this? You know, I was almost thinking, you know, actually what I might do is I might actually take the stalker character out and turn it into a completely different book, because I really love the stalker character. Mm. And that's in a first person. So, you know, I had to really go over to sort of the real dark side to actually imagine how somebody could think the way that this person does. I did actually work, consulted with a neuropsychologist on, again, not trying to give too much away, but certain type of brain damage and how it can manifest itself in behaviour and how people manage that. So I did seek advice on that sort of thing to try, I hope, you know, really bring a credibility to the character. So there were times when I was like, whoa, okay, this is, there's a lot going on here. But with that many different elements to it, there does need to be a certain amount of planning.
Mm.
I know that some people do it all in their head. What I do is I plan out, because there's sort of a number of points of view as well. So I plan that out. I plan broadly where the main plot is going to be and where the subplots are, the points of view, where the turning points are and things like that. So at least I have a guide, and I use it almost like as a little guide, but then I just write and I let it go. And I think a lot of authors probably do that, because there needs to be a point where the story and the characters take over.
Mm.
And so, you know, the characters like Olivia and Vitali, and, you know, there's the counterterrorism command guy as well. You know, there's what happens in America. And I find that as I write, the best plot twists, you know, the most sinister stuff just happens. And it may be, you know, not according to how I planned it out at all, but it's way better. And I just let it go, and it produces, you know, the best story. So it's a combination of the both. But yeah, I'm the kind of person that needs at least a sort of a broad map as to where I'm going, because when you've got so much complexity and intrigue, I think it helps just to have a little bit of a guide.
It's a lot to juggle.
As I said, there were times I was going, why am I doing this? But it's all come together. So yeah. I wanted multiple layers of mystery.
Mm.
You know, there's all sorts of mysteries. Mystery about her past, which only a very small amount is revealed in this book. It's one of those things that I've held back.
Yeah.
Because we need to learn more about her in the next book and so on in the series. You know, there's mystery about Vitali. There's also, Dan Casburn, who is the counterterrorism command, who is very aggressive in the beginning.
He's a great character.
Yeah, he's a great character. He's quite intimidating, and his method of law enforcement goes way beyond what some people may deem is appropriate, the right thing to do. I think that's probably a good word for it. Thank you. So there are all these different characters and strains, and I just wanted to, you know, create lots of levels of questions, and of course there are these Russians that turn up and so on.
Well, and there's the Moz.
Cohen. Yeah, we love Moz. The cantankerous, rude editor. Yes, I love Moz. He's hilarious. He's the praying mantis. He's all long limbs and biting sarcasm.
And it gives you, and all of these characters, you know, give you a really good sense of Olivia's, you know, her work life and just all the people that she deals with professionally in this, like, career that she has, which is so dangerous and so amazing. There was one thing I wanted to ask you about, which is it was a powerful image that stayed with me, is that in Olivia's house, which is doesn't say very much about her, it's all very clean and minimalist, she has a wall of photographs.
Yes.
And unlike with other people who might have photographs of their friends and families and they might feature in the photographs, Olivia's are all photographs of people that she's met on her travels and dealt with. And could you tell us about that and why she has them up on the wall?
So Olivia is, her job in many ways makes her a loner, but she is quite naturally a loner, a very self-sufficient loner. She's very private. So, and even in her own home, as you said, there are no photographs of her with family, and there are reasons why, as you will discover, why family really doesn't feature very positively in her life. And in fact, her brother is quite a dangerous element, potentially, in the book. That having friends, making friends, being popular is not what's important to her. She's completely dedicated to her job. So the people that she actually cares about are the people that she meets in these countries, in Afghanistan and so on, in the war zones, that she cares about. So she has a wall of photographs of all the places she's been and the people that she's interviewed. And one of them, which is... I won't go into too much details about what happens with that particular photograph, is of a girl from Afghanistan who has had the most awful life, and she really cares about her. She's actually allowed herself for once to become emotionally involved, and to be able to be a really good reporter in these situations, you need to tell the story, not become the story, not become emotionally involved in the story. But it's quite clear that Olivia has become very emotionally attached to this poor girl who you'll meet in the second chapter. So it has a photograph of her because she really cares about her. And the wall, in a way, is a way of reminding her why she does what she does, why she keeps doing it, and why she really lives most of her life from backpacks. And she only comes back to that flat to rest up before she goes on after her next story.
I found that detail about her life really was a moment where I started to get a strong feeling for her character and how interesting and complex she was. And one thing, we talked about how they're generally, it's not as though there's never been a female lead in a thriller, there's plenty. But particularly in this case, I just feel like it is a different kind of female lead in a thriller that I haven't really encountered before in my own reading. We talked about this as well before the podcast, yeah. Elizabeth Salander. Another one that sprang to mind for me was Kit Glanigan from the Chelsea Kane series. Okay. Like, we have plenty of examples of strong female leads in thrillers, but in this case, Olivia, while still being, you know, a woman and feminine and everything, really did remind me so much more strongly in her backstory and in her motivations as a character that we've seen more traditionally as a male. So, like, she's very much devoted to her job. She's not motivated from being a victim, which often happens.
No, I really wanted to make sure Olivia gets into terrible trouble.
Yes.
Some awful things happen to her. But she's absolutely not a victim, and she will keep going. And she also, I deliberately set it up so that realistically, because she's not a G.I. Jane, I didn't want an ex-military type, I actually didn't want an FBI or a police detective. And you're right, there are strong female detective characters, you know, there's some great ones. But where I tend to write, there aren't so many females, particularly with a non-military or non-policing background, because there are a lot of brilliant thrillers with that, and I wanted somebody who was different.
Yeah.
But also can credibly look after herself. Now, but that doesn't mean she's not vulnerable, because I wanted her to be a fully rounded character. I didn't want her to be some, you know, sort of two-dimensional superwoman thing, because that's not who she is. You know, she makes mistakes, she is flawed, she's got quite a background. She's possibly, people could say, she's drawn to the wrong people, who knows. She's not particularly, she's not worried about, being liked.
Yeah.
She has people around her who will do anything for her because they respect what she does, like the retired detective who teaches her how to defend herself with everyday objects, which is actually a real technique. It's a real martial arts technique that she's using, particularly, was actually developed for nuns.
Oh, wow.
In Tibet. Where, you know, you can use sort of more everyday objects and you can actually defend yourself when you're much smaller, because I deliberately made Olivia quite petite. She's not an Amazonian woman at all. Mm. She's actually only 5'4". So she's quite but she's, because she's a quick thinker and she reacts quick, fast, she can get out of most situations. So I really wanted to create a character who has longevity, can go all over the place, but can realistically deal with and survive some of the awful things that she has to go through. So there is a kind of, you know, Lisbeth Salander is resilient. You know, yes. She goes through the most terrible things. Mm. And she has a very interesting moral code as well, which is quite fascinating. But, you know, she survives almost death,
yeah.
And keeps going with what she believes she has to do, and so I found the Millennium Trilogy very inspiring because of that.
Yeah, it was when I was reading it, I kept pausing and trying to put my finger on what it was about Olivia Wolf that made her different, because I could rattle off so many examples of other strong female characters, but she's just in a way different. It's
well, good.
It's a different kind of strength.
I hope so. And I hope people sort of, you know, enjoy the sort of the interesting mix that she is. And there's a lot more to her still to come. You know, so I hope people will, go from this adventure in Antarctica on through to the next one in South Africa.
I've actually been to South Africa. I'm looking forward
to
it.
Have you?
I have.
Well, I've just got back from there,
the
so yeah. Oh, so wow. I just got, because I've been doing some research for the next one. Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to the next book. There are, and this is where I have to start dancing lightly around things to not have spoilers. But there are characters that I hope to see again.
Okay.
Yeah. Characters, you know, that I hope are reunited. And right. We'll
oh, really? Okay, yeah, no, we have to be careful about what we say there. Yeah, so you'd like, yeah, okay, well, I'll bear that in mind when I'm writing the next book.
Excellent. Am I allowed to ask what's up next for you? Is it another Olivia Wolf book, or will there be?
Yeah, so I've got to hurry up on the next one. So I've got a deadline. I've got a deadline for that one. So the next one is Olivia Wolf going on to South Africa. Again, not to say too much, but she'll be investigating a very odd connection, as it first seems, between a very senior cabinet minister in the UK with a very powerful syndicate that is doing something really, really terrible in South Africa. Mm. So I won't say any more on that.
That's very tantalizing.
But yeah, so and what it relates to is something that is a very big issue in South Africa at the moment. So it's very topical.
And roughly, will that be next year at some point?
Yes, it should be next year.
Wow.
Yes.
That's good. I like to know that there's not a huge wait for the next
one. No, I hope there won't be too much.
But before we can have that one, I strongly urge people to read Devour. I very much enjoyed it. Totally engrossing. Just a really cracking good thriller. And thank you so much for coming in today, LA Larkin.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been wonderful. It's been a joy to talk to you.
And Devour is available now at your local bookstore or online at Booktopia.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.